Sheboygan ranked among the 25 most ozone-polluted cities in the nation on the new American Lung Association State of the Air report card that is out today. Duluth Superior ranked among the top 25 cleanest U.S. cities for year-round particle pollution. We're combing through the numbers and what they say about the air we breathe here in Wisconsin. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Good to have you along. Janice Nolan is Assistant Vice President of National Policy for the American Lung Association. She directed the 2018 State of the Air report. She analyzed data, wrote the report about local conditions and national trends in air quality. Janice, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. Delighted to be here.
So before we dive into the numbers, what is the purpose of the State of the Air report? Why do you do it?
Great question. We started the State of the Air report 19 years ago because we wanted a way to help people understand what can be incredibly complex information that the data from monitors around the country collect about the air they breathe. And so we were looking for a way to translate that into something that would be a little more understandable for folks rather than having a long series of numbers. We decided a good way to do that was take things they were familiar with, like unhealthy days when they got a code orange alert or something, and translate that into grades. So we started doing grades A through F, pass, fail, and then we added rankings to it so that people could see how the air quality where they lived compared to other parts of the country. And that's been really helpful. People have found areas that they thought, you know, they had no idea they had an air pollution problem. We've helped them to understand that they can, even at levels that are far lower than, say, a place like Los Angeles, where everybody thinks of having air pollution commonly.
Well, you mentioned monitors around the country. Where do you find the numbers, and how can you draw conclusions from a large amount of data?
The monitors that we use information from are all operated on a daily or regular basis by states, local governments, tribes, even some federal agencies. And they supply this information once it's quality assured to a federal database that EPA has. We get someone who downloads that information and helps us sort through it based on evaluations that are established by measures where we're looking at how do you figure out, how do you assess the amount of air pollution that you're breathing over a certain period, like 8 hours or 24 hours. And we have that calculated, and we then translate that into where it is on an air quality index. So for example, on a day like tomorrow in a city like D.C., we're going to have a code green day, which means that the air quality is expected to be at healthy levels. But on other days, we're going to have a code orange day, and that means that the air quality is expected to be within a certain range of problem of concentration. There's going to be so many parts per million of this pollutant. And then at higher levels, you get even more of the pollutant. And so what we do is sort those data from the monitors, what they recorded, by those categories, and then we use that to help calculate what is a weighted average so that a day that has worse air pollution gets more points than a day that has average air pollution. And then we add those and divide by three and come up with a weighted average. And that's how we do our evaluation for two of the pollutants that we're looking at, for ozone and for the short-term particle pollution. I can go into these details, but we also look at data that EPA collects and averages for the annual average of year-round particle pollution. So we have multiple ways of getting this information, but we're trying to take complicated stuff and make it a little more user-friendly.
Well, let's better understand here two kinds of pollutants that you mentioned, one being ozone, the other being particle pollution. What's the difference?
Well, ozone is a gas. It is a very common gas. The kind that we're talking about is ground-level ozone. It's three oxygen atoms connected together. It is a highly irritating gas. It doesn't come out of a tailpipe or a smokestack. It comes out of the raw ingredients. The emissions from tailpipes and smokestacks get into the atmosphere, and they cook in the atmosphere in the presence of sunlight and heat and form ozone. So ozone sometimes forms and shows up, in the worst cases, a little downwind from where the sources are that gave it its raw ingredients. Ozone is probably the most not well-controlled pollutant in the nation. We have a lot of it around the country. A lot of places have high levels of ozone. But it is a gas. It is invisible. And it's commonly called smog. It's just something that people think about when they think about pollution. Smog, and generally speaking, its use is ozone. It refers to ozone now. Particle pollution is different. Particles are tiny bits of things. They are microscopic bits of things. They are 1/30th the diameter of a human hair. So it's something that is, you only really see it, the haze that you see when you see photographs of heavily polluted areas. That haze include the very, very fine particles that we're looking at, and the sunlight can be refracted through them because they're so tiny you can't even actually see them. But they're also so tiny that they bypass the body's natural health protective systems that would allow us to keep them out of our lungs. They can get past that and deep into the lungs. And in fact, some of them are so small they can actually pass into the bloodstream. These pollutants are very widespread. There are lots and lots of sources of them. And so when we're trying to figure out, well, how do we reduce that? We've got a lot of places to look. They're also made of a lot of things. They are sometimes caused by things that are commonly organic, like wood stove burning, or things that you don't necessarily think could be harmful to you, like dirt. But they are very, very, very tiny. And because they are also very reactive to things, they can absorb a lot of different pollutants on them in the chemical creation of them. Some of them are created in the atmosphere, like ozone is, where other chemicals that give off are react in sunlight and create these very tiny particles, and they can absorb a lot of different kinds of chemicals on them. So what we're looking at now really is the size issue. We kind of categorize them by size because we can't quite lump them in by what they're composed of yet, though a lot of research is going on to that. But bottom line is both of these pollutants, ozone in particulate matter, particle pollution as we call it, are very harmful, and they can cause a lot of health harms in a lot of different ways.
We're talking with the American Lung Association's Janice Nolan. She directed the 2018 State of the Air report. That's a national report that's out today analyzing data about the air, national air trends, air quality across the country and here in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Perhaps you're a runner and have a physical sense of what you get from each breath. Perhaps you have kids who jump and climb and play, and you think about the air they breathe. What do you wonder about the air and how it affects you in your life? 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Morning. Janice, let's dive into the ozone issue first. 8 of Wisconsin's counties have an F grade for high ozone days. So what is that indicating to you?
It means that a lot of people in Wisconsin live in the areas that have measured numbers of days that can be very unhealthy, that can put their health at risk. And people we're talking about include not only, for example, we often think of people with asthma, and other people with chronic lung diseases like asthma are definitely in an at-risk group. But we're talking about children and teenagers, because literally 80% of their lungs develop after they're born, and their exposure to ozone can affect how their lungs grow. We're also talking about older adults, people over the age of 65, because they've been around a while and their lungs aren't as resilient as they once were, and so they're more sensitive to that. We're also looking at people who are working or exercising outdoors. We've got some studies that look at even healthy adults who are exposed to high levels of ozone can have their lungs affected measurably by the pollution that they're breathing. And so those, and also people with low income, those are one of our other at-risk groups, because they tend to live near places that have a lot of ozone or live near places that have a lot of sources of pollution.
Like plants and factories?
Exactly. Things that are creating the raw ingredients that mean ozone, that create ozone, or they're living in areas where levels of ozone are very high because of the general overall pollution in that area. But they have a lot of risk often because their body's stress levels are already high because of their economic status, but they often have areas where they are not necessarily have as much access to medical care or get as good treatment as they need for their problems. And so evidence is showing that they are at higher risk from air pollution.
And so what can people do to protect themselves?
Well, there's a couple of things that we should recommend to everybody is to check the air quality index for the day ahead of you. If you're somebody who's an at-risk person or have a member of your family, which pretty much everybody has somebody in their family that fits in these categories, you should be looking at the air quality index. And that's a forecast that's done on a daily basis. Sometimes local weather stations do it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes local radio stations provide it. Sometimes you can, if you don't, you can go to airnow.gov and there's information on a daily basis about what the forecast is, what the air pollutant of concern is. And so in days when levels are high, like they're code orange or red or purple or even worse, maroon, which fortunately I don't think you're going to have that problem much in Milwaukee, those are places that you want to make sure that you limit your outdoor activity. So that you're not having, and your children especially too, that you're not exposed to that much outdoor activity on that. So that's one thing to do. And then there are steps you can do to help fight pollution, that you can help reduce pollution, like driving less, using more energy efficiency measures, because electricity generation is one of those things that contributes to pollution.
And we're going to pause right there. Janice Nolan is with us, Assistant Vice President of National Policy for the American Lung Association. She directed the 2018 State of the Air Report. Coming up, we'll talk with a pulmonologist from Milwaukee to understand medical complications that arise from breathing dirty air. That's just ahead here on the Ideas Network. More than 1 in 10 people in the U.S. live in an area where too many days with bad levels of particle pollution. That's more than 35 million people in that situation. We're talking about the new American Lung Association State of the Air report card that's out today here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Do you struggle to breathe? Do you have asthma or COPD? Have you seen a family member or a friend cope with respiratory problems? What has that taught you about the importance of clean air? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's bring in now Dr. Randolph Lipchick to the conversation. He's a pulmonologist at Froedtert Hospital in Milwaukee. He's also a professor of medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Lipchick, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
So how do we know that clean air contributes to our wellness, our overall well-being, and how does ozone impact a person's health?
Well, in people with lung disease, and you've mentioned asthma and you've mentioned emphysema, but also a variety of other scarring lung diseases have the consistent finding of inflammation in the airways. And when people are exposed to ozone or high levels of particulate, that inflammation is worsened so that they have more trouble breathing, more coughing, more chest congestion, more shortness of breath. And so that constant additional insult just makes their symptoms worse. So if you happen to live in an environment where the air is clean, then it's much easier to control your symptoms.
And these problems can also present in the emergency room. What do you see in your patients?
Well, what happens is people who ordinarily may be in control will have more trouble controlling their symptoms, particularly on ozone alert days. So you'll see much more traffic in the emergency department, more phone calls to the clinic, people with just in trouble, people who are having trouble breathing.
Do you see more people with these problems, or are there different triggers or even more serious symptoms going on?
It depends. People with asthma, for instance, asthma can be a very mild disease or it can be a constant debilitating disease. Everybody's a little bit different. But when you add the environment, a pollutant to the mix, it just makes things harder to control. A lot of asthmatics are taking medicine regularly every day to control the inflammation in their lung. And if nothing else upsets the balance, then they do okay. If you get into a bad a day with bad pollution or particulate, then the symptoms are harder to control. And in a severe asthmatic, that can make the difference between staying home and functioning or having to be sent to the hospital, or in an extreme case, you would have to be put on a breathing machine.
Helen in Middleton is emailing wondering, what can people do to protect their lungs if they live in a bad area? Will masks help? Avoiding being outside during certain times of day, what would you suggest?
So the ozone issue usually is more problematic in the summer and when we have more sunlight and there's more heat. So if you're a person who's otherwise healthy who likes to exercise, it would be better to exercise earlier in the day before the sun has had time to have that photochemical reaction to develop ozone. On particularly bad days and with people who are very sensitive, they should avoid exercising outdoors. If you can do it inside, that's better. If you stay in an air-conditioned environment, the air will be cleaner. But it's hard when your environment, the outdoor environment is affected. It's very hard to avoid that altogether.
Are masks of any use?
Not particularly. Some of these small particulate particles are so small that a standard paper mask may help filter some, but won't filter all. So if you have lung disease in particular, it may help a little bit, but it's not going to eliminate the problem altogether.
Rachel called in to ask about the quality of in-home air. She has an ozone machine to sterilize and deodorize indoor air, but is it doing more harm than good, she asks? Is it contributing to the problem?
That's a good question. The most of the time, these ozone-generating machines do not generate the levels of ozone that's similar to the on an ozone alert day.
Mm.
So she should not be having difficulty in her house.
Let's go to Tom now, joining us from Burlington. Good morning, Tom.
I just had a friend of mine who died from lung problems on Wind Point. And Wind Point is between Racine and then the Oak Creek utility electricity plant. Anyway, my question is, two questions basically. In Racine, they cut down the trees and they planted these trees that have smaller leaves, but they produce pollen. And the pollen, when it comes up from the south, it goes to Wind Point. And the problem is, does mold grow on the pollen? And then does that affect people?
Yeah, Tom, wondering how much does tree pollen impact air quality?
Yeah, so tree pollen is a much larger particle, and what the issue there is more of an allergic reaction. So if you are you have asthma and allergies, that's another trigger, which would make asthma much worse. But that's a different process than the micro particulate and the ozone. But it definitely is a problem for people who are very allergic to pollen.
Dr. Lipchick, how does air pollution affect people who have chronic disease? How are they impacted differently than people who are in relatively good health?
Well, people who are healthy, the human body is quite resilient, and if you're otherwise healthy, we can tolerate a certain degree of challenge or insult. When you have chronic disease, heart and vascular disease, lung disease, kidney disease, your body's already stressed by a certain degree of underlying inflammation, and so that air pollution and ozone just accelerates the process and further stresses the body. And as you, if you're chronically ill, you have less ability to withstand those extra stresses.
We're talking right now with Dr. Randolph Lipchick. He's a pulmonologist at Friedert Hospital in Milwaukee, talking about the new American Lung Association State of the Air report card that is out today. You can call in with your questions, health-related questions that deal with clean air and dirty air, 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. What do you consider when you light a campfire? Do you have a burn barrel on your farm? Even if you're legally burning, how do you think about the plume of smoke that wafts into the air? Something to think about here as we have this conversation about the quality of our air we breathe here in Wisconsin. 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Janice Nolan here, still on the line, Assistant Vice President of National Policy for the American Lung Association. She directed this 2018 State of the Air report. Janice, back to you here for a moment as Dr. Lipchick is talking about all of the health risks, the consequences of what happens going into the ER. What do you see as the biggest health challenges that come with breathing air that's contaminated with any substance our bodies aren't meant to process?
Well, just with the two that we're looking at, ozone in particulate matter, and even with ozone, as common as it is, the most severe is that it can actually shorten your life. It can actually kill you. And we've got studies that have found that levels that we thought were safe are not. That levels, looking especially at older adults, a recent study that looked at people who were over 65, living in areas that met what are currently considered safe standards, actually had their lives shortened more than they would have had they lived in areas with less pollution. So that's probably the number one big health effect. One of the things we've also learned is that these pollutants don't just affect the lungs. They don't just affect the direct impact on the lungs is strong, but it's not the only place. They can affect the cardiovascular system. And as we're looking beyond the chest, they can also affect the cognitive system. They can affect how babies develop in utero. Whole lot of range of things that we're beginning to do more studies on, and looking beyond the lungs, we're finding that these pollutants are far more harmful than we had appreciated. And we also are not looking at them in a way that we're trying to figure out, all right, what are the possible all range of harm there are. We're looking at what are the good studies show, what do the science back up, what does the evidence in repeated studies or in long-term studies or in clinical studies show, and also what is the toxicological method for this action to happen? How do these changes occur? How does ozone cause that? How do particles cause that? And we're finding that they're very complicated and very, very powerful pollutants that can have a lot of harm that we didn't appreciate just a few years ago.
Dr. Lipchick, you've also seen in your practice breathing air that's contaminated doesn't only trigger specific health episodes, that can also filter into family life. It can filter into someone's career, cutting it short. How have you seen particle exposure change the course of someone's professional life?
Well, if you can imagine, if someone is frequently absent from work because of recurrent health problems or in needing to go to the emergency room or the hospital, you potentially could be let go as an employee. And then if you're not earning money, then your family is financially strapped. So it affects every aspect of a person's life.
Let's bring in Susan now, joining us from Madison. Hi, Susan. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for having me. I am concerned about the impact of petroleum products indoors and outdoors that people with allergies or intolerance, sensitivities to petroleum products are having severe problems breathing. And these are frequently caused by fragrances being worn by people in clothing, on their lotions, on their perfumes and colognes and stuff, and also outdoors when people are using clothes dryers in the house, what's happening outdoors makes the outdoors toxic for people. And then there's the pesticides and the herbicides and the insecticides. And then there's the airborne, there's these plastics that become volatile and have airborne particles from being heated, seeing sunlight, and having detergent being washed. And just
so, Susan, a lot there on your list, starting with these petroleum products that we use in many different aspects of our life. Janice, let's start with you. What impact do you see there?
Well, a lot of the products contain what are called volatile organic compounds, and those are often seen, those are the chemicals that are included or gases that give out from any oil and gas or petroleum kind of product. They are very common. They are used in a lot of things, from not only the products that we use in cleaning, but some of the furniture that we have, some of the carpeting that we have, the paint that we have. And what we encourage people to do on indoor air especially is to look for things that are low VOC. So that they're not going to have those emissions coming into their house as much. But on outside air, we're also trying to deal with those because they're sources from, say, oil and gas extraction, or from even the vehicles that you drive that are producing those VOCs into the atmosphere. And so there are measures that are being used that can reduce that, so that those are not contributing to as much of a problem. Those are one of the major categories of raw ingredients that contribute to the creation of ozone, because they can be harmful directly by what you're breathing them, but also harmful in their secondary life as ozone. So we definitely are aware of those and definitely are concerned about them, and are trying to inform people that there are ways that they can look to protect indoor, their indoor air quality, but also to take steps on outdoor air that can help reduce those VOCs being in the air that we breathe. And she's mentioning a lot of other pollutants that, or a lot of other concerns. And our report, we focus on two because there are a whole range of things that could be looked at. So we're looking at them, but don't, there are other activities that are going on that are looking at a lot of these others, so that we can help reduce and help inform people to protect themselves from these other pollutants as well.
Dr. Lipchick, when you talk with your patients, what advice and changes do you ask them to make, or see if they can make, in order for them to improve their lung function?
It's interesting, the question about the perfumes. A lot of asthmatic people are very sensitive to strong scents, and that can trigger asthma attacks. So, for instance, in our clinic and in our hospital, we have scent-free hand cleaners, and we post signs asking people not to wear strong colognes and perfumes when they come to the clinic. But otherwise, avoidance of things that cause irritation, use of their medication to control their underlying inflammation is as good as we can get. I mean, it's really up to the population to sort of demand from our leaders and our government that we should minimize the level of pollutants in the environment. We can't personally stop that as an individual, but we could certainly demand it from our leadership.
Well, Dr. Lipchick, thank you so much for taking time for us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Dr. Randolph Lipchick is a pulmonologist at Friedrich Hospital in Milwaukee. He's also a professor of medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. And the American Lung Association's Janice Nolan is staying on with us. She directed the 2018 State of the Air Report, analyzed the data, writing the report about local conditions and national trends in air quality. Here's the upshot. Ozone pollution worsened significantly in 2014 to 2016 compared to the previous report. While improvements continued in year-round particle pollution and fewer episodes of high particle days, you can join in with your questions, your insights, 800-642-1234. Are you a resident in one of the areas of Wisconsin graded an F on air quality, or do you live in a place that passed with exceptionally clean air? Does that matter to you? Do you think about it, or do you take the air for granted? Who should determine air quality, and what should we do to keep it clean? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to the conversation and your questions right after this news. Thank you. Duluth Superior made the top 25 list of cleanest U.S. cities for year-round particle pollution. Cheyenne, Wyoming ranked number one. Los Angeles, though, remains the city with the worst ozone pollution, as it has for nearly the entire history of the report. We're taking a closer read of the American Lung Association 2018 State of the Air report that was released today. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Janice Nolan stays with us. She is Assistant Vice President of National Policy for the American Lung Association. She directed the 2018 State of the Air report. You can join in with your questions, your insights, 800-642-1234. What do you wonder about the air and how it affects you? Is it enough for the U.S. to assess and regulate air quality, or do we need a multilateral approach? Maybe you think we don't need any rules and that our air is clean and safe. Call in or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Bob, who is waiting in Clay Banks with a question. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Morning. Thanks for the show. I was concerned or wondering about the total effect on air quality from burning propane as opposed to burning wood for heating.
So burning wood for heat in a home. Janice, any insights there?
Yeah, they both can create issues. Burning wood, it depends on what the controls on your wood-burning stove or your stove are like. Some of the old stoves are very, very old and don't control much of the emissions that come out of them. There are newer stoves, if you're really interested in burning wood, that meet what EPA is setting up for even more protective standards in 2020. But some of them are already in the stores and they can be bought that are less emitting than most of the old stoves that are out there and are being used. And we encourage people. In fact, we're working with some communities where wood burning is their primary source of heat to figure out ways of getting them cleaner stoves. We recommend, however, that a less polluting problem is using something like a natural gas or propane. They're not without their own health effects because you do, create emissions when you're burning something in your home. But they are cleaner for the most part for communities than the wood-burning stoves. What we're particularly would recommend against are things like outdoor wood boilers. Those are things that are being promoted to the outdoor hydronic heater kind of thing. So the things that are used 24 hours a day to provide hot water for the home. And those can create a lot of pollution in a very local community. Sometimes it's hard when we're doing monitoring, because we don't have monitors everywhere, to be able to assess how much effect a pollutant source that's coming from, say, your neighbor is affecting that little area where you live, compared to its role in the whole community, the whole county's air quality. But we see a lot of these where some of these sources like wood stoves are creating real problems with the neighborhood, but may not be, after the wind disperses a little bit, getting registered as much in the county's monitor. So we just want people to respect their neighbors and realize, too, that their own health is affected by some of these. So there are cleaner devices if you need to use wood or need to use gas to be able to use these to heat your home. Just be aware that both of them create problems. They're not necessarily one is good and one is not.
Bob, we appreciate the question. Janice, let's dig into Sheboygan a little bit more here, which received one of those F grades. It also made the national list, tying for 24th on a ranking of most ozone-polluted cities in the country. What do you see happening in Sheboygan?
Well, Sheboygan is an interesting place because it is north of Milwaukee and north of Racine, north of Chicago, where a lot of pollution comes from. And one of the questions that came up in the analysis that I know EPA was looking at when they were looking at these data was, how much of it is local and how much of it is blown in? And their analysis looked like a lot of it was coming in from outside of the county, though I understand that it can come from not only from Milwaukee, but coming from Chicago emissions as well. But it also probably has a lot of local emissions. I'm not familiar with what's going on in Sheboygan, but I do know in the analysis that I saw of it, they were recognizing that it was some sources that were further away were blowing ozone pollution into the area. And this is one of the realities of ozone. It doesn't stop at county lines. It doesn't stop at state lines. We have a lot of places where they are really suffering from too much polluted air blowing directly into the community. And so that's one of the reasons that the Clean Air Act requires that we look at those kind of areas, and that EPA require that these areas that are upwind have to clean up in order so that they don't pollute downwind counties. We're seeing more of that these days where EPA is making that rule happen.
Is this drift that's going on when you can smell forest fires states away, perhaps?
It's a similar kind of thing, though. Okay. With ozone, it's not visible. Ozone is a gas, and so you have to measure it. You have to see where it's coming from and analyze the sources of emissions that are creating it and see how the wind patterns travel. And they do a detailed analysis of this when they're looking, trying to figure out, all right, what's the problem and where we got to go with it. The state does that. EPA does that. And the compare notes to see how it's working. And Sheboygan isn't the only one. There are several other counties along in Wisconsin, Door County, for example, that's pretty far away, that has high levels of ozone, largely blown in, as it looks like, from the Chicago and Milwaukee metro areas that are coming into those areas. So then things have to be, when we clean up sources, it's important to recognize that the pollution that you're producing in one community doesn't stay there. It blows into other communities, and we need to recognize that, as the Clean Air Act calls it, the good neighbor policy, where you need to take steps to clean up your community because it also helps to benefit your neighbor.
So over the almost 20 years of this report, have you seen any cities improve significantly on your metrics? And if so, what did they do? What was in their secret sauce to address their air quality problem?
Well, I'll give you a story that I use a lot because it's very personal to me. When we did the first report, three cities in my home state of Tennessee were on the 25 most polluted list. And the 12th most polluted city in the country was a little place called Knoxville, Tennessee. Mm. And we had no idea that we had the kind of pollution levels in Knoxville, Tennessee that we did. And this report helped us to understand that. When we look back now at how many days using the new standards and evaluating, Knoxville had on average about 85 unhealthy air days a year that first year's report. Last year they had one. That's a huge improvement. And it largely comes from cleaning up big sources that were blowing pollution into that area. In that case, a lot of power plants. We've cleaned up a lot of cars and gasoline, a lot of other things that have contributed to the problem. Nationwide, we've done those cleanups. Now, they did some local things as well, but nationwide, the measures that we've taken to require that coal-fired power plants put on equipment that reduces emissions, or that we transition to cleaner fuels, that we use cleaner gasoline. Just a couple years ago, for example, we changed the formula for gasoline because the sulfur that was in the gasoline then actually poisoned the emission control system in a car. And so when we cleaned up that gasoline, everybody's emissions control system worked better in their cars. It didn't require us all to buy new cars. It was the system that currently worked actually works better. So we're taking steps in many, many ways to reduce pollution, and all of those have benefited most of the U.S. Just about every county in the country we've seen improve, reduced emissions just even a few years ago compared to today. Now, this year's report, because we had a really hot summer in 2016, and again, heat helps to contribute to ozone, we had an uptick in ozone in many cities. But even looking at 2 years ago, it's much better than it was then. So we're seeing progress, and that's one of the great things about having done this report over a long period of time. We can see that the steps that we put in place under the Clean Air Act actually do work to reduce pollution.
Well, Mary Kay is joining us from Kenosha. She's been waiting a while. Mary Kay, thanks so much for waiting. Go ahead.
Good morning. I think the government should continue their monitoring the air to improve air quality, because when you walk outside, it smells like vehicle gas and pesticide. So the cleaner fuel should be the number one thing. The second thing should be trolleys instead of so many buses. Allow people to ride pedal cars and bikes, maybe a kiosk cities can have. Light and air-conditioned sensors that only go on when you need them. Stove vents, dryers up to code, home air ferns, more herbs in cooking, and no smoking apartments, low-income apartments, even elderly and disabled, need to have no smoking.
So Mary Kay, bringing a list of things that people can do, that communities can do. Janice, looking at some of these cleanest air places, Duluth, Minnesota, or the Superior, Wisconsin area, as Wisconsinites like to call it, it ranks 18th in the country on a list of cities with the cleanest air, and that's based on year-round particle pollution. But other shoreline communities don't fare as well. What do we know about how communities keep air free from these particles over a sustained period of time?
Sometimes it has to do with local sources that are not that are well regulated or cleaned up. Other times it has to do with where the wind travels. Just again, it's not necessarily somebody's fault that the pollution in their community has high levels if they're downwind from a source that creates it. An example of that is Fairfield, Connecticut, which had the highest ozone in the eastern half of the country. And it's not because of what Fairfield, Connecticut's doing, it's because of the pollution that blows in there. So in many cases, it may be because the area is located in a place where the pollution that would normally collect there if it had, say, a ridge of mountains around it are actually blowing in somewhere else, so it's not showing up there. In some cases, it's because they've got sources that their local sources are under good control, and they're fortunate enough to be in a place where downwind pollutant isn't a problem. But it definitely can vary by community. I mean, it's one of the challenges that we see in a lot of places is where their geography or their topography puts them, makes it harder for them to address outdoor air pollution, and we have to do more. And again, one of the things that we recognize is that upwind sources have to control their pollution to protect their downwind neighbors, because they can't deal with, if you've got pollution that's coming across your state line that's already too polluted, there's nothing you can do about it. You have to go upwind to make sure that it gets cleaned up.
So as we wrap up here, knowing what we do know from the State of the Air report, where do we go from here?
We have to keep fighting. I mean, the Clean Air Act has worked extremely well over the last 45 years to help us reduce pollution. However, it's under threat, and there are processes that we're seeing in the current EPA that we're very concerned about that we're going to continue to fight. But it's the Clean Air Act and the tools that we've used in the Clean Air Act that have gotten us to the much cleaner air that we have today. And we need to respect that, and we need to defend that, and recognizing that climate change is going to make it harder for us to deal with that. So we also have to be supportive of measures that would reduce climate change as well.
Janice, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Janice Nolan is Assistant Vice President of National Policy for the American Lung Association. She directed the 2018 State of the Air report. She analyzed data, wrote the report about local conditions and national trends in air quality. Earlier in the hour, we spoke with Dr. Randolph Lipchick, a pulmonologist at Frederick Hospital in Milwaukee. This hour of the morning show was produced by Keely Boltina and Ideas Network Director Cheryl Gasser. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation comes to you on the Ideas Network.